This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thanks for staying with us here on The Morning Run. You're with Lin Mark, Wang Xiaoning and Roshan Kennison. It is 7.35 in the morning, Monday the 2nd of December. And in about half an hour, we're going to be having the breakfast grill where Noelle Lim speaks with Chew Kok Hin, CEO of AIMS.
Yeah, AIMS is one of the core businesses of ListedTime.com and is expanding into the region, mainly in Tier 2 and 3 markets. Now, the question is, as a relatively small data center operator compared to international firms, how fast can AIMS grow? And could Amazon Web Services and other global tech giants in the cloud space eventually kill their business? And would merging with a global operator or player in another market be the best option in the future? And Noelle Lim will be asking these very hard questions later on.
Yeah, this sounds very interesting, right? Because AIMS is the second largest business in Time.com, which has been an outperformer in our sovereign wealth fund's portfolio, Kazana. So I'm really interested to hear what this has to say, because data centers are really big business.
All right, and tune into that conversation after the 8 o'clock news. But in the meantime, taking a look at some international headlines for you, China's Belt and Road Initiative is undergoing a shift in branding somewhat since the second Belt and Road Forum in April of this year. And there are some new ways the Chinese are exploring it. For example, a majority of BRI products continue to be in infrastructure construction, but there is a rising trend of Chinese participation in other areas, including efforts to develop the digital Silk Road.
Now, Malaysia is one of the countries involved in this Digital Silk Road initiative, as we agreed to collaborate on a project for an artificial intelligence park with the help of Chinese unicorn SenseTime. These will foster the development of Malaysia's capabilities in robotics, AI and big data. The Economist Corporate Network, along with Baker and McKenzie, have recently put out a report on how the Belt and Road initiative will change as we move into the next decade.
So for some insights into the key takeaways of the report, this morning we have with us Pamela Chu, a director for Southeast Asia at the Economist Corporate Network. Thank you for joining us, Pamela. Now, the Belt and Road Initiative doesn't quite have the best of reputations. So what are some of the ways that the Belt and Road may continue to evolve on that front?
The very stark finding that we got from doing the research is that market participants in general are a lot more optimistic of the opportunity around Belt and Road for private sector involvement. I think in the first kind of 4 to 5 years of the launch of Belt and Road, many market participants still saw it as a government-to-government initiative. And they saw that government-to-business was not that exciting for them because they didn't see those projects as being ready for their participation in terms of being a commercially viable project. But increasingly, I can see that mood changing. So banks, large-scale infrastructure firms such as AECOM or other participants in around Belt and Road such as Honeywell or ABB, a lot of these companies are now increasingly excited around those opportunities because they are seeing that there is a genuine commitment from the Chinese authorities as well as the Chinese SOEs that they want to involve international companies, international participants around Belt and Road projects.
Now, the report also points out, as we expect, that BRI, although it spans continents, still largely focuses on Asia with actual emphasis on ASEAN. Now, will this pattern continue as we enter into the next decade and why?
I mean, the numbers from our end are quite substantial that Belt and Road is still majorly an Asian play, and a lot of the big projects are taking place in particularly Southeast Asia. Belt and Road has now expanded to a much wider variety of countries, from Latin America to Sub-Saharan Africa, the Middle East. So it is definitely a direction where it's not going to be so heavily focused on Asia, but at the same time, Asia will still form a quite substantial market for those Belt and Road projects. I think that one of the key reasons that are up and coming in terms of Belt and Road would be the Middle East markets. And the reason is that many of these Middle Eastern markets, such as the UAE, they have their governments have come up with a very strong framework that would encourage more private investment to go into those markets and infrastructure projects. So coming up with, for example, quite a solid public-private partnership agreement framework, those are key things that would then allow investors to feel more comfortable, whether those regulations are clear, whether there is recourse if there's something goes wrong with those investments. But in many other of those markets, like sub-Saharan Africa, there are significant risks involved that are not necessarily related to the Belt and Road specifically, but really around the environment for which investors feel comfortable in investing in large-scale infrastructure projects that still need quite a lot of government support.
Now, although BRI projects tend to center around infrastructure, there is a growing shift towards the Digital Silk Road. How exactly is that playing out?
It's definitely on the radar. So a lot of our the people that we've spoken to, it's definitely something they're excited about. But they've also mentioned to us that it's not forming at the moment a substantial portfolio as compared to the traditional Belt and Road projects such as power or telecoms or ports and railroads. Those still form the core of what you would consider the focus of Belt and Road projects. Digital Silk Road is interesting, it's definitely up and coming, but at the moment not a significant part of that portfolio.
Thank you so much, Pamela. And that was Pamela Chu at the Economist Corporate Network. Now, Malaysia is, of course, a participant as well of the Belt and Road Initiative, with the ECRL being the poster child project here. So for a look at Malaysia's involvement in the Belt and Road, we also have with us this morning Andre Gunn, a managing partner at Wong & Partners and a member firm of Baker McKenzie. Thank you for joining us, Andre. Now, the ECRL often dominates the conversation around the Belt and Road Initiative, but what are other key BRI projects in Malaysia, and how involved are we as a whole?
Yes, the talk of BRI for Malaysia, a lot of the consciousness of BRI and excitement around it began with the previous administration. And of course, ECRL was something that was very topical and probably controversial at the time. But actually, many other projects are also essentially BRI. For example, in Malaysia, of course, there was a lot of hardware infrastructure projects, the usual suspects that went into categorization as BRI. So this includes ECRL, the Malacca Gateway, the Kuantan Port Extension, and the like. Also real estate, the Forest City Development in Johor. But as BRI evolved, some investments into Malaysian companies also fell within BRI. For example, Geely's investment in Proton, the China Galaxy joint venture, CIMB, also the Bandar Malaysia project and the like. So as you can see, it's China is also adapting its BRI strategy to meet the requirements of home countries.
Now, on the digital front in Malaysia, earlier this year, the government agreed to work with SenseTime to create an AI park. How exactly will Malaysia be involved in this digital Silk Road?
AI Hub was announced to much excitement earlier this year. It is a joint venture. So there will be clearly Malaysians' participation in the project. On Malaysia's side will be G3 Global. So it is being touted as the most valuable AI setup. Startup to set up on Malaysia's shores, something like $1 billion of investments in the next 5 years. So there's a lot of excitement. I think the initial concept has been developed. Progressively, we will see more details over the life of the project. I think this is clearly going to be a shot in the arm for Malaysia's efforts to value add in terms of the services sector and as well as our climb up the technology value add ladder. Personally, I think it's a great sort of profile project for Malaysia, sealing Malaysia's position as a host and a promoter of technology. But I think details do need to be seen. I mean, there is a big construction around the park, around the AI hub. So it's incumbent on us as a host country as well to ensure that the soft skills, the infrastructure, the follow-up, the regulatory support all lead towards the success of the project.
Thank you very much, Andre. And that was Andre Gunn of Wong & Partners telling us a bit more about this AI hub that has been announced. Because honestly, right, guys, when I heard the words AI park, my initial thought was something along the lines of a Terminator theme park. I'm not going to lie.
A Terminator theme park. That is something, that's a marketing plan you could sell to Universal. Is it Universal? Whichever studio has that, I would totally go to a Terminator theme park.
But I think ultimately, at the end of the day, most of the money on this BRI is definitely going to be on the hard infrastructure kind of projects, right? AI park, sorry, I got distracted there. The AI park is just one portion of it. BRI is really about actually China using infrastructure spending as a way of promoting their own foreign interests, right? It's a new version of foreign policy.
Checkbook diplomacy, I think, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, they've already got 130 countries signed up to it, and it's gone beyond just Asia. We're talking about Latin America. Even UK is participating in it, and especially since they're moving into Brexit, they want to tie up China. So I think definitely in the next 10, 20 years, a lot more initiatives coming out of this, a lot more relationship with China across the region.
All right. So very interesting to see how the Belt and Road Initiative will continue to develop. But right now we're heading into a few messages. And up next, we'll be speaking about whether the government should relax rules on home loans with Dr. Carmelo Frelito of Ideas. If you haven't already, don't forget to vote on the poll we have running on the BFM Twitter account. That's at BFM Radio. We're asking, what is stopping you from owning a home? And we'll be taking a look at the results of that during in just a little while. So be sure to stay tuned. BFM 89.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.